You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to the Friday night show here. We don't have our host. Not sure what happened to him. So, unfortunately, there won't technically be a host tonight. I probably won't even throw this up in the archives, but what I will do is I'll at least play some audio for a little while. While I actually look for a different streaming service, because this pay-as-you-go one I'm using is incredibly expensive. I didn't realize how much bandwidth we actually need for Renegade Broadcasting. So I'll be working on that. And in the meantime, let's listen to Stefan from Thule Productions. He has a pretty good rant here. Pretty fired up. I think you might find it enjoyable. So I'll be back with something else after that. Perhaps I'll find some good Rockwell material as well to honor him on the 50th anniversary of his death. Here we go.
Okay, we're recording. Hello, everybody. It's been a while since I've recorded anything, but I've been busy writing my book, which occupies about 7 hours a day of my time. But this morning, as I was hanging out with Wolf on Skype while editing what I've written thus far, we came back to an old topic we've had, I think, about a couple of months ago. I think earlier this year, if I remember right. And I wanted to record this. I let Wolf here say hello and then let him kick it off. Go ahead, Wolf.
Okay, am I coming through clear?
Yeah, you're coming through clear now. Let's knock on wood and hope that it stays that way.
Definitely. Well, this got started, I'd say, right around the time we did the videos about the CBE program and Christian Piccolini and them. I had come across this channel called Murdoch Murdoch that produces this entertainment cartoon for pro-whites. And there was a lot of terms being used, and I had mentioned them to you, like alt-right. Instead of using Jew, they were using the word the JQ. They were saying things like purity spiral to significant whenever people go too pure and you know, they can't get anything done because they're trying for too much purity, and how people were trying to, you know, bring in tech, which is that frog that Richard Spencer thought up. We see everywhere going on right now, meme wars and this and that. And at the time, I was a little caught up in it. It was interesting, and I was talking to you about it. And, you know, we kind of got in a serious debate about it at the time. And, you know, months later, I've noticed some other things going on after Charlottesville, which I'll explain what brought me to this. But I realized that you were right in that discussion. A little debate we had. You were right that using those terms helps the enemy, and it's not a good thing. And I'll let you explain your points on that.
All right. Well, let me first say the following. I've been involved in this so-called movement, if you want to call it a movement, since about, I'd say since about around 2000, 2001, give or take. I mean, I've been racially aware my whole life, but really actually involved in it since about 2000. And in those 17 years, we've only ever had two terms that kind of defined who we are in this movement. White nationalists and national socialists, right? In those years, I've known different types of people within the so-called movement, anywhere from members of the Ku Klux Klan to skinheads to just straight-up national socialists, white nationalists, and so on. This term alt-right didn't come to my attention until we made that video on CBE, at which point I ended up asking myself, what the fuck is alt-right? What is this shit? Where did this come from all of a sudden, right? And I was talking to Wolf earlier, and he was basically telling me how he finally came to understand what I was telling him last time we were talking about this topic. And I said to him, the alt-right is essentially controlled opposition. These people who are talking around the bush, instead of calling the Jews and using these alternate names to call them by, and being ever so afraid of revealing their identity, trying to preserve their identity, are essentially being controlled by the Jews without even realizing they're being controlled, right? So some clown at some point comes and brings new terms and new types of words to the table for people to use, right? And he calls it the alt-right movement. So people start using these alternate terms. They start using these goddamn pepe heads to basically define themselves in form of avatars when they post comments on YouTube or whatever other sites they may be posting on. And all it's basically doing is just kind of shrouding what they really want to say or what they ought to be saying. I was saying to Wolf earlier, why are people using these fucking goddamn toad heads, these annoying pepe heads, or whatever they're called? I mean, whatever happened to using an iron cross as an avatar when you're posting on YouTube? Or swastika? Or the SS runes? Or, for God's sake, if you're from Scotland, use your fucking Scottish banner to define where you're from, to identify yourself with your culture, with your heritage, with your country, with your nationality. If you're from Ireland, your Irish flag, or if you're from the United States, Confederate flag, or maybe even the old colonial flag, or hell, you can even use a wolf or a raven or something that identifies yourself with something related to your heritage. What the fuck is this pepe hat? I mean, in my personal opinion, it's stupid as hell. It doesn't make any sense. What does a toad hat tell you? Nothing. What does an iron cross tell you? A lot. So, if Goebbels was here, and I'm not professing to know what Goebbels might think if he was here, and I'm not professing to know what Adolf Hitler might be thinking about all this if he was here, but based on my assumption and logic and intuition, I think they would find it as stupid as I do. They would probably say, maybe, that these symbols people use, these stupid toad heads, right, that they don't really say anything. If we use any symbols, I mean, why do we even use symbols? We use symbols to identify ourselves with something, an idea, a concept, right? So if our idea or if our ideology is supposed to represent the preservation of our white culture, of our nationality, of our culture and heritage? Shouldn't we use symbols that are related to it? Like in my case, for example, the German imperial banner for black, white, red, for example, or the Iron Cross, or anything related to my German culture. And equally, for any other white person, whatever their background might be, whether that's Scottish or whether that's Swedish or Norwegian or American or Irish, etc. Something that tells a person, as you post online or as you write something, when they see your avatar, oh yeah, this person is obviously Irish. He's got an Irish flag. He's proud of his Irish blood. He's proud of his Irish heritage. But why use this stupid, dumb-ass paperhead that doesn't tell you anything? It's just, it almost seems like people that use these symbols, these elusive symbols that don't tell you anything, as if they're too afraid to admit, oh yeah, I'm proud of my German heritage, or I'm proud of my Irish heritage, or I'm proud of my English heritage, or I'm proud of my French heritage, etc. And then these words that they use, I noticed this years ago, back on Vanguard News Network, when people would, instead of say Jews, they would say Jews with two O's and an S. And I thought to myself, what are you, too fucking afraid? Too cowardly to come out and actually use the words? I mean, and I was saying to my comrade Wolf here, I said to him, our ancestors that established the Third Reich, they weren't cowards. They were willing to go out there and fight for their freedom and to establish the Third Reich and to regain the freedom and the livelihood for the German people by shedding blood. And they did. And people who are even too afraid to use the proper symbology that defines us, you're not going to get anything accomplished if you're not willing to put your life on the line, if you're not willing to bleed for your freedom. You will never gain freedom. You might as well put yourself right next to the lemmings and line yourself up with them. Because I tell you right now, in order to win back our freedom, in order to free ourselves from being enslaved by the Jews, you have to be willing to die for it. A true revolutionary knows that. A true revolutionary is willing to fight and die for his freedom and the freedom of his people. And if you're too much of a pussy to to at least show yourself, if you're posting online with some avatar, by displaying at least, you know, the proper colors and the proper symbology, as it were, if you're even too afraid to do that, by the gods, maybe you should just hide under a bed and piss in your fucking pants. And that's just me basically going, because I'm very irritated that this so-called alt-right movement, that I personally see nothing more than controlled opposition, that essentially has people using these alternate words to try and basically talk around the bush, instead of just coming out, yeah, it's the fucking goddamn Jews who've got us white people enslaved. No, what do they say? Oh, it's the, I mean, give me these terms that these goofballs, these Muppets use, Wolf. What was one of those words? A JK, or what was it? What did you say earlier?
A purity spiral, and they'll call the Jews the JQ.
The JQ. What the fuck is wrong with you fucking people? JQ? Are you fucking kidding me? Why, you can't come out and say, it's the fucking Jews that got us enslaved? Because that's the people that got us enslaved. What, are you too afraid to use the word and put it in your mouth and use it? I mean, I don't understand why you be afraid of using the proper terms. If you got a Negro in front of you, Or if you got a problem with the Negroes, which they are, wait, you're afraid to call them a nigger? Because that's what they are. You're too afraid to call them a Negro? I mean, my point is, if you are too afraid to use the proper terms and actually speak your mind, how are you hoping to get anything accomplished and help free our white race from being enslaved by the Jews? Hmm? Because to do that, it'll take a lot more than just writing comments on a website or talking to other people on Skype and chit-chatting about it. It'll require you to basically speak what's on your mind and to bring it right out into the open, not talking around the bush. That doesn't get anything accomplished. And like I said, the only way to free ourselves is to really actually eventually fight. And I mean armed combat, armed conflict, and be willing to sacrifice one's life if needed. So I'll let Wolf talk for a bit because I don't want to take all this time up and just having me talk here. So go ahead, Wolf.
You know, and from a strategic perspective, what have we been fighting for since the days of Lincoln Rockwell? We've been fighting for the minds of the normies, these still asleep white brothers around us, to wake up to what's going on. Initially, I saw these, you know, words like the JQ and all right. I'm like, okay, it's a way for the normies to ease their way in, but I realized now that no, it's a waste of time. It's a delay tactic. They don't know what alt-right is. They don't know what JQ is. So now I got to explain that. Then I got to explain why we're using it. But they know what Jew is. They know that word. They know National Socialist. They know that word. They know the swastika. They know the Confederate flag. The enemy has packed their brains for that. It's almost like they've paved the road. So why should we take dirt trails to get to the Capitol? Use their roads and retake our symbols back, and we can move a lot faster. And, you know, something that triggered me on it was somebody that I consider very awake. The other day I heard him saying something about, you know, at the next event we have other Charlottesville, people need to not show up with swastikas and Confederate flags. And that bothered me. So I'm like, no. How long have we fought to get those terms back, to get those symbols back and wrestle them away? How many have died, went to prison and rotted away for, you know, to achieve that? We don't give that ground up now. If the press wants to, well, who are we cooking for? The press? The press is going to label us all evil white people all the way, so we might as well own the damn term and come forward with it. The tide is rising. People are waking up. You know, it's the using all these alt-right, the JQ, I realize it's just a way for people to stand in the middle of the road rather than getting on one side or the other, and that's one of our biggest problems. William Pierce talked about this when his video, The Middle Class Gets What It Deserves. They know the problem's going on, but they just kind of want to ignore it. They want to stay in the middle ground. We need to cut this out because we might be making jokes and doing meme magic, but the enemy is genociding us. They are not screwing around. This is a real war with consequences. And unless we get our nations in order, we're running out of time. We don't have time to waste with all this. And one final note I'll add in, you know, for Charlottesville, who on, you know, forget Kessler and all those guys, who are the alt-right leaders, the ones that constantly use these terms and profess them and push them? Who were the guys that had all those people show up? Because the people that show up were just both genuinely believing in a cause. I'll admit it right now, when they did that torch march, I thought that was great. I thought that was awesome. I was inspired by that. But who let them into that town? Who was supposed to set up the deals? Who were these people, these alt-right leaders? Hmm? Are any of them married to Jews? Are any of them professors of these terms? Don't use the JQ. Don't say the Jew. Don't do this. Are any of these people supportive of homosexuals or others within the movement? Check it out and you'll find it's true. No wonder we walked into the dragon's mouth at that point. You know, I think a purity spiral is exactly what we need. We need to be pure. We need to be white and for white people. No Jews, no homosexuals, no race missing. None of that needs to be tolerated. And that's something you said a while ago, Stefan. I realize you're right about that. Because trying to placate and trying to play this middle of the road thing, it's wasting valuable time. It's wasting time, and we don't need to do it. The normies just need to come on over and get on board with the winning team.
Let me put it this way. The first thing I want to say is, you can call a Jew a thief, and it will not bother him. You can call a Jew a murderer, and it will not bother him. But once you start calling the Jew by his name, by the way he's called, a Jew, he will cry out in pain. The Jew does not like to be called a Jew. Go out into the bus or out in public on the mall and say, "Oh, those Jews," and you will see how many people will look at you. The Jews are terrified of being called by their actually named Jews, and rightly so. And symbology. Why do we use these symbols? Like I said, because it defines who we are. Our symbology, our swastikas, our runes, are basically no different than the language we speak. I mean, you're too afraid to use the symbols that define who we are. You might as well stop speaking your native tongue and maybe not speak at all, because that's exactly what our symbols are. They're like a language that tell not only us and those of our people around us, but also our enemy, what we stand for, who we are, and what we're doing. So what's this bullshit about people shunning still the swastika in our so-called movement? The only people, I mean, you must be really a dumb fuck and ignorant to no end if you're still shunning the fucking swastika. Or you're an agent that belongs in the enemy's camp who's infiltrated our movement and who's basically trying to sabotage what we're doing. Either one of those two. But a true white person who's proud of his white heritage, who's willing to fight for the survival of his white race and his white culture, would embrace the swastika because he would know, he or she would know, what Hitler fought for, what my German people fought for, and for what they died. The freedom of our blood, the freedom of our white race, that's what they fought for and that's what they died for. And they used these symbols without shame. They used them with pride and they displayed them in pride. Not only on marches and speeches, but in battle, fighting the enemy, fighting and dying in battle, displaying our symbols with pride. And people who are not willing to use these symbols because they're too afraid, hiding behind their PC monitors, worried about their identity being revealed. Well, you're fucking cowards. And I do not feel regret for saying this, but you are cowards. Our people, time and time again throughout history, have shed their blood to gain their freedom. Look at the Scottish people. For 700 years, they fought against the English, ever trying to basically retain or gain their freedom. They were willing to die for it. Look at, and I will say this now to the Americans that are listening. Look at your ancestors here in America, when this country was still being controlled and governed by the British Empire. They wouldn't have gotten anything accomplished. There wouldn't be a United States of America if they weren't willing to die for it. And many of them died on battle fighting the British, the Redcoats, right? Just take an example from them. They didn't sit around in the houses and talk around the bush. They didn't say, "Oh, those nice British people." They didn't use some sort of code names or code words to call the British. They called them the Redcoats, or they called them the Brits or the English and whatnot, and they said it with disdain, and they were willing to go out there and fight them. My point is, I understand people have jobs, but you know what? It's way beyond the point of worrying about your fucking jobs and your fucking houses and all that material bullshit. We're in a fucking war, people. And you have to stop be willing to fight for this, for your fucking freedom. Okay? Because there's nothing else that will get it done. You have to be willing to fight for it. And it starts by not being afraid of your identity and what you might be saying online. "Oh no, the Jews are watching me online. I cannot say Jew because there's some program that might be monitoring me." Fuck that shit. Who gives a fuck? Just speak your mind if you speak anything. Stop being a fucking coward about it. I mean, I might be stepping on people's toes, but I don't give a fuck if I step on people's toes or not. Because I'm getting tired of this fucking Mickey Mouse show here. With people talking around the bush and using these fucking gay pepe heads and using these alternate names to describe what they're trying to say. You got a problem with Jews? Call them out by their fucking names. You got a problem with niggers? Call them the fucking niggers as they are. Okay? And use the symbols that we have to define who you are. If you're from Ireland, then display your Irish flag to display your pride in your Irish heritage, in your Irish blood. He's a gay paperhead. You know, I mean, Wolf, I'll let you talk for a while because I've been going on a rant here.
Oh, no, I agree with you. And, you know, I think we got our point across on this. You know, he's right. We have to stop using their terms. Stop giving the enemy what they want. They don't want us using two. They want us using all these other words. Stop giving that to them. Use the terms that they don't like. The enemy's hurting us. The enemy has hurt us. We're the ones being genocided, not them. And we have to hit them back. And the way we do it is by using the terms, using the flags, and using our own symbols. You know, I'd like to see somebody inspire. You know, they got Pepe. Can we put a wolf symbol out? Can we put a raven symbol out? These are our symbols. Let's take all this back and question anybody that shames anybody for displaying these symbols. Because who are they begging? Are they begging for scraps from the Jewish media table? I'm done with that. Screw the media, the mainstream media. Everybody knows they're full of shit. Everybody knows what they're going to label you as. There is no such thing as non-Jew-owned media. Don't worry about it. The gods are with us. The tide is rising. Now's the time to use those terms. We should repudiate using terms like alt-right, any of these others. It's Jew, call him out. Just like Stefan said.
Yeah, and for those people who still have a problem with Hitler, who still, you know, doubt about it, go fucking educate yourself, for fuck's sake. There's plenty of information out there on YouTube alone. There's no excuse at this point anymore to claim ignorance. There's plenty of information out there that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt what Hitler fought for. He was not an evil man. He was a liberator. He was a great man who moved nations, who moved people, who moved things, who fought for our freedom. Not just the German people, but all the European people, especially the white race. And not only that, he was making alliances even with non-whites who were willing to stand against the same enemy, too. That being said, we should not make any compromises. Fuck making compromises. No, we don't accept homosexuals into our fold. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, those who are willing to accept faggots into our movement might as well go suck a fucking cock themselves, you know? We're not fucking Peter Puffers. We don't make compromises. We don't accept that shit in our movement. We've got our ideology. We've got our standards, and they shall not be compromised. No compromises. Not stepping back behind the line, but forward. Our enemy is lashing out at us with all their might. We should be lashing back at them twice fold. It's kind of like this. This was like the Roman times, and a Roman soldier hits a Germanic warrior with his sword. Then the Germanic warrior should bash the fucking living ever shit out of the Roman soldier and fucking cut his goddamn head off and nail it with a fucking tree. That's what should happen. Where is the wrath, the white race that we used to know back in the elder days when our ancestors went out on the battlefield and sent those fucking Romans screaming and running backwards towards fucking Rome? That's who we must become again. Warriors. And that strength you will find in yourself if you're only willing to look. And it's further strengthened by connecting with our gods. That's why I always stress it. It's important that we reconnect with our ancient pagan ways. That is where strength lies. We're not sitting around like a bunch of Christians waiting for, oh, God is going to save us. God is going to save us. Oh, he sits in heaven. He knows everything because he's all-knowing. And Is anything happening? No, fucking nothing is happening. We must make something happen. Why? Because the gods are willing to help those who are willing to help themselves. Okay? And while the Christians sit around with their finger in their ass, we pagans are willing to fucking die for our freedom and fight. And that's what we must become again. We must become a warrior race. Another sitting on a fucking couch and praying with a goddamn cross in our hands and looking up to the sky and saying, oh, God's going to save us. Bullshit. That doesn't mean all Christians are like that. I have a few Christian friends who'd be willing to fight. But there's a lot of idiot Christians out there, and I call them Judeo-Christians, who basically just sit around and pray for a miracle to happen, right? And then there's these assholes from the old right, and I'm not saying every person in the old right is an asshole, I'm sure there's people in the old right who were led there, who are awakening, and who will come to realization, you know what, I should be a national socialist, because that's where it's at, national socialism. Anything else is wishy-washy, elusive bullshit, okay? If you want to take any examples, look towards the Third Reich. You know, it took like the entire globe to defeat Germany, essentially. The entire globe, you know? So, well, not sure what else I can say here on this subject. I mean, whatever else I say will just be what I've already said like 5 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago.
I'll add this in at the end. If you're listening to this, if you're hearing our voices right now, you're already considered of the higher level of awake people. That is why it is important you repudiate using terms like alt-right. And when you hear somebody around you that's newly awake and starts using it, you need to tell them, you're wasting time. Stop wasting time. Don't use alt-right. Call them the Jew. People want to call you Nazi. Say, no, I'm a national socialist. Are you a fascist? Say, I'm a fascist. Are you a identitarian Christian? Then say that's what you are. And say the Jew. The Jew, calling the Jew out is the most important thing in using that term, the Jew. And you can make a big difference on the people around you by you repudiating this. Because whether you like it or not, people look to you that are listening right now, the higher awake people, they look to you for guidance and advice. May not think that, but they do. So when you hear somebody that's newly awake, you need to tell them. Do use your own tact way of doing it, but you need to tell them, hey, why you shouldn't use those terms. Because we need to wake people up faster, and it wastes time. And it's what the Jews want. Call them out for what it is. Use our symbols. Men died. This past year, we lost Ernst Sundell, Bob Whitaker. You know, that's just recently. And these men died to get these symbols back for us and fight for the terms that we can use. Jews, say white genocide, and put the fear in the enemy. Don't let them die. Don't let their time be wasted. Don't let these new guys showing up who race mixers promote homosexuality and all these other problems, and they want to cuck. Don't let them lead and waste what all those men died fighting so hard for us to have right now today. You don't honor them by doing that. And, well, that's all I got to say on this. I think we've covered it.
Yeah, that's basically it. I'm trying to think of the. Is anything else I would like to add? Let me think. Well, I think that's basically it. Rise and stand proud amongst those who are willing to fight for their freedom. And don't be afraid of saying Heil Hitler or Sieg Heil. Or 88. Those are a way of stating what we are and what we do. Be proud of it, for fuck's sake. And there's one thing actually that you'd like to say that's not connected directly to our topic here, but I've got so many people now commenting on my channel, on videos, I really don't have the energy nor the time to really answer comments anymore. So if people are wondering why I'm not answering comments, I'm sorry, it's just too many comments. I mean, I spent hours each day working on my book. So if I do any sort of writing, it'll be my book. That's where I like to spend that energy. I make these videos because that's where I render what's on my mind. I shouldn't have to answer comments, and which takes a tremendous amount of time writing that and posting it and looking through comments. So please don't expect comments from me. I let my videos do the talking. You folks can go ahead and communicate with each other, post comments. That's good.
All right.
But
that's just a little bit of housekeeping there. What I'm going to do now is play his speech from George Lincoln Rockwell from 50 years ago plus 3 months, shortly before he died. I'll read out this little memorial from Robert Heimdall. This August 25th, 2017 marks the 50th anniversary of George Lincoln Rockwell's death at the hands of a punk named John Patler, who had been closed to Rockwell's circle for a time. Rockwell was killed by gunshots while leaving the Econo-Wash laundromat at the Dominion Hills Shopping Center in the 6,000 block of Wilson Boulevard in Arlington, Virginia. It's almost a strange coincidence that Rockwell died precisely during the same time so-called Summer of Love unfolded back that summer of 67. And we all know that that counterculture event was a CIA MKUltra organized project. One of these tragic twists of fate, I should say. Regardless, the tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist in me tells me that Rockwell might have been terminated by some alphabet soup agency of some sort as part of a certain agenda. As a homage to the man, I decided to put what is probably my favorite speech by him, recorded precisely in May of 1967, just a few months before his tragic death. Rockwell sounds energetic, sometimes funny. No wonder he came from a family of artists, from the show business, to the point of sounding almost like a stand-up comedian responding with bare facts to the occasional laughs and hostile rants by the audience, apparently mostly consisting of liberal students and other people of the same ilk. But most of all, Rockwell sounds right through and through, even if some of his statements might sound a bit dated today after 5 decades. A lot has changed ever since, but the enemy is still the same one, and he is still using the same old tactics. I wonder if anyone up to this point has been able to deliver speeches in such an entertaining fashion while disclosing such dangerous statements. Some people here have never listened to this speech. I highly recommend listening to it now. Next March 9th, 2018, will also mark the 100th anniversary of George Lincoln Rockwell's birth, so I will write that down on my notebook. Rockwell was one of these rare men in a million. Trivia, August 25th was also the 117th anniversary of Friedrich Nietzsche's death. Okay, here you go. Enjoy this speech.
Nietzscheism is, and how it came to power. We are presenting Triumph of the Will as an example of Nazi propaganda technique. No better historical example is available. We are further presenting Commander George Lincoln Rockwell as a living spokesman for the cause espoused in the movie. It is our desire to drive home the immediacy of the doctrine by presenting Mr. Rockwell. It is our goal to present a complete educational experience by combining learning with experiencing. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy the program. Written questions concerning Triumph of the Will or Mr. Rockwell's speech will be collected at the close of his speech. Paper for writing the questions has been attached to your program. I should now like to present the commander of the National Socialist White People's Party, George Lincoln Rockwell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Raff. And let me first say how grateful I am for this opportunity to speak on the academic community. It's the only opportunity left to me in this country to speak in a way that the American people get to hear and judge me for themselves. In every other forum, every other place I attempt to speak out in the street, the people who loudest claim to love free speech and demand free speech for themselves usually insist on using physical violence to try to stop me from enjoying my free speech. And when I try to speak in the streets, I need troops. The only place where I can speak, I can't even hire a hall. When I hire a hall, they usually threaten the owner. There's bomb threats and so forth. So this is the last refuge of free speech left in the country, and I'm sorry to say it is usually accorded to me by the liberals. And I must confess, I admire their courage and their sincerity in granting this opportunity to me. I'm going to try not to abuse it. I think it is a privilege not only for me, but for the people and for the students to be able to judge for themselves directly what I have to say, rather than have somebody always telling you what it is that I am preaching. As an example of what I mean, about a year ago, you saw in Playboy magazine an article that purported to be a verbatim transcript of an interview that occurred with me. Well, that thing took place, the Playboy interview, over a period of 2 years, four different days over a period of 2 years, a tremendously long thing, would have filled up two or three magazines, which was then edited and put together into a fairly honest interview by a Negro interviewer named Alex Haley, who wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X. He was kind enough to send me the manuscript, and I had to confess it was pretty honest. Then it went to Chicago to a Jew by the name of Murray Fisher. And after that, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't recognize it when I saw it in the magazine. Everybody else that gets interviewed by Playboy is regularly given galley proofs so they can see what they're supposed to have said so they can correct them. I never got any galley proofs. But my point, ladies and gentlemen, is once again, a man named Murray Fisher interpreted for you what I have to say. A couple of months ago in Esquire magazine, they had another article purporting to give you the lowdown on George Lincoln Rockwell, and once again, the author was Fred Shapiro. Now, I wonder what you folks would think of an article called The Absolute Unbiased Truth About David Ben-Gurion by George Lincoln Rockwell. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, is what is not only done to me, but done to you. When you are denied the right to know exactly what somebody says, and you are told what that person says, and you are never allowed to hear that person, you can't judge honestly. You are being forced to prejudge that person, as many of you may have done before you came into here in this audience. Some of you here right now, before you have heard me, are already getting ready to protest and demonstrate. You are not willing to give me a hearing before you do it. You have prejudged me. You are prejudiced. And I think the people that are standing up... Now we know who's prejudiced here, and I bet these people are the very people that demonstrate for the freedom to protest the Vietnam War by burning American flags and so forth. And I can tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, I'm regularly arrested and regularly sent to jail. I just got 3 more months in Chicago this morning. I'm keeping my eye. Now I know who believes in putting people in jail for their ideas. I wonder what you think if they threw the communists in jail for their ideas. You people wouldn't applaud for that. I'm for that. And I can further tell you, if I catch anybody burning an American flag or any of my people, we're going to stop it by force. I don't give a damn what they do to us after it. We're not going to tolerate the burning of American flags. To get into the body of my speech, ladies and gentlemen, let me return to the theme that I was talking about, the mere fact that you are not ordinarily allowed to hear directly for yourselves what controversial speakers have to say. They are interpreted for you. Now, I think that this is very much akin to what is happening to our whole country, ladies and gentlemen. You are not allowed to see the charts by which to navigate truthfully. Let me ask you this. What would happen to the navigator of a great ship on the ocean who had to bring his ship into a new port into which he'd never gone if you gave him phony charts? What would happen if somebody substituted for the real charts, forged charts, which showed the rocks where the channel is and showed the channel where the rocks really are? What would he do to that ship? He'd pile it up on the rocks, and it wouldn't be his fault. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you young folks particularly are the navigators of this great ship of state of the United States. Particularly in the coming years, you will navigate it. You will make the decisions and the choices which will decide which way the ship will steer. And I am maintaining they are giving you phony charts. They're lying to you. They're misrepresenting. You've heard about managed news. You're the victims of suppressed news. They are not showing you where the rocks are, and the ship of state of the United States is piling up. And I think one of the best proofs of it in the world is the Vietnam War. I truly believe that we ought to stop communism every possible way. But if we're so damned anxious to stop communism, why don't we do it in Cuba, only 90 miles away? Why do we go 10,000 miles away to Vietnam and risk American lives in a war that we don't win? I can't understand that. I think we should win it. And I'm telling you, instead of winning it, they've got... Let me tell you what's going to happen to some of you young fellas here, perhaps. Some of you young fellas here, a year from tonight, as I speak here now, a year from tonight, some of you fellas may be over there drafted. And let me tell you what's the result of this forged charts and this liberalism that they've been teaching us and preaching to you, and they preach to me at Brown University. What's going to happen to you? In those Vietnam jungles, they got these tunnels. That's one of the favorite tricks of the Viet Cong. They build tunnels, and they hide down there. And in order to get them out, they're going to take you young men and give you a flashlight and a pistol and send you down in the tunnel with a pistol looking for these guys. They're waiting down there for you with their pistol in the dark. Now, ladies and gentlemen, American kids are getting killed doing this. All you need to flush those rats out of those tunnels, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get them out, is tear gas. You don't have to send kids down there. You can put tear gas. Do you know why we don't use tear gas? Because world opinion is against it. Tear gas is reserved in this country for the girls at the University of Mississippi. You can't use it on the enemies of our country that are killing American kids, that may kill some of you. They kill some of the people every night. You hear of the people in the Southland, the people from here, that are getting killed by these Viet Cong terrorists. And they won't let you fight them. They won't let you stop it. All they keep doing is temporizing because they won't tell you the truth. I see there's one American naval officer that had the guts to say, if we're going to fight over there, we ought to win. So they put him before a medical board to see if he's insane. That's exactly, the medical board just said, we can't find out that he's really insane, so they're going to find something else different. Here's a kid that's in the greatest tradition of the American spirit. He wants to win the war. And they put him up before a Navy medical board of admirals and so forth to see if he's nuts for wanting to save American lives by winning the war. That's the situation you've come to, ladies and gentlemen, because they are lying to us. They're lying to you. Tonight you have a chance. Whether you like me or not, you have given me the chance and the privilege of judging for yourselves what it is that I'm saying, not reading some Playboy article or Esquire article or prejudging like these people standing up before they've even heard what I have to say. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot, in a short period of time I have here tonight, I can't cover all the facets that I would like to cover. You have seen a film here, and by the way, this is an unprecedented experience for me. Where every school where I go to, they usually show films all right, but it's usually atrocity, horror pictures, propaganda pictures put out by the Jews that are supposed to get you all tear-stained, dripping tears before you hear my speech. In this case, they've put on a propaganda film for my side. And I'm a little concerned because the speech that I have is not designed to be in the tradition of the sort of a speech that you would hear at a Nuremberg rally. I don't believe that would do any good for me to get up here and give a ranting speech on nationalism and racism and so forth. Because it would be totally foreign to all your experience. It would make no contact. And what I'm trying to do tonight, ladies and gentlemen, in 40 or 30 or 40, 50 minutes that I have, I can't hope or expect to convert you and have people coming up here and asking me for an armband. I don't expect any such thing. The only thing that I can possibly hope to do, ladies and gentlemen, is to show you why I once, sitting out where you now sit, when I was at Brown University, I was almost a liberal. I just couldn't get down Eleanor Roosevelt. All the rest I tried to go along with. I was almost a liberal, and something changed me to the point where I now stand before you, not ashamedly, but proudly, as a man who bears the title of a Nazi, a National Socialist. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't hide it. I don't go around claiming I am something I'm not or I'm not something I am. I simply tell you what I am and what I believe. And the difference is, the reason I was almost a liberal in college and I now stand here as a Nazi isn't because I'm full of hate. It's because I discovered I was lied to. There were a lot of facts they hid from me. Shocking, enormous facts. Just absolutely paralyzed me when I found them out, and I've brought some of them here to show you tonight. I'm going to prove to you here tonight that they are denying you some of the most basic charts that you need to navigate the perilous waters of the ship of state of the United States. They're not telling you what's going on. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot come here with a trunk full or a box full of documents. And incidentally, that's another point on the Playboy article. They continually said Rockwell never supplied the documents. Please remember, ladies and gentlemen, as we go over this speech, please remember what I am supplying here, and you remember that every one of these was supplied to Playboy. They just went out of hand and said he didn't supply the documents. What answer do I have? What do I do? They got a circulation of 8 million. What do I do in my little Rockwell report with a circulation of a few thousand? I have no way to answer it, so most people believe that I have no documents. You here tonight judge whether I have documents and whether they're shocking. I'm going to show them to you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't get impatient. Those of you who are standing up, you're probably getting tired. You'll get a lot more tired. The prejudiced people that are standing up are going to get a lot more tired because I think I'll speak extra long tonight so they can stand up. So stand up, fellas, and get wobbly knees. I think you will as you begin to hear some of these documents and see what. Oh, I guess I'm going to get a standing ovation. I think that's what we'll have to call it if it gets big enough here. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I could not possibly bring all the documents that I have would like to show you, nor can I project them on a screen. I can't have you read all of them. I can't pass them out to the audience. So here's what I'm going to do, because I know inevitably there's going to be somebody say, ho-ho, those aren't real documents. He's just waving a paper in the air. Well, here's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to make the same offer I've made at every college where I've been speaking all year long, for years. If anybody, standees or sittees, or crawl-inners, or whatever, flag-burners, or whatever they are, anybody who can prove that these documents are phony or don't exist can collect a reward of $1,000 from me simply by proving that they don't exist or that they're phony, that I'm lying. That's all you got to do. And as a matter of fact, in some cases, it would be criminal libel. You can give me another jail sentence if these are phony. Get the DA and have me arrested for phony documents, for forgery. Nobody's ever done it or even tried to collect the reward because they're not phony. I'm going to present sincere, straight documents, and I think they'll shock you. Further, I'm going to go another step further. Since I cannot give them to you here, I'm going to make you the same offer I've been making all over the country. I invite you, I urge you, if you are going to say to yourselves, he's taking it out of context, it doesn't exist, you'd have to see the whole thing, we have printed every single one of these documents in its entirety, photostatically, not quoted it, but printed the whole thing by camera, so that you can see and read the whole business of anything I'm going to quote, and we're going to offer it to you free. Your name is not on any mailing list. We're not trying to get anything. I simply want to get the documents to anybody who has the guts to check them out. And all you have to do is write to me, George Lincoln Rockwell, Arlington, Virginia. That's all the address you need. They know where I am. Write to George Lincoln Rockwell, Arlington, Virginia, and you will receive the packet of every document that you will see and hear tonight. And I'm going to go another step further, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody, this is one that the standees will really enjoy. If anybody can prove, oh, they'd really love this if they could do it, but the fact that they haven't done it for all these years, so they haven't got much. If anybody can show, ladies and gentlemen, that I am misrepresenting and these documents don't exist, that there's anything phony about the whole presentation, I will fold up the American Nazi Party and go to work for Martin Luther King for nothing. Don't worry, I'll put on blackface before I do it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the first document that I'm going to show you is the one that shocked me perhaps the most. Here is a document which I couldn't possibly believe was on the level myself when I found it in the Library of Congress. That's where I got it. Here is the photostat of it right here in the form that you get it from us. This is one of the pamphlets with all the photostatic documents. This one is a full-page article from the London. You can cite it yourself and get it from your own library if you don't want to send it to me for it. Here's the citation. London Illustrated Sunday Herald, February 8, 1920, at the time of the Russian Revolution, or right after it. Page 5. Here is the full page available to you so you can see it all. Now, I can't read it all. I haven't got time. I'm going to take some selected portions. I'm going to first give you the title and what it's about. The title is Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people. And the author, ladies and gentlemen, is a man that there is no person in this audience can say is a bigot or a fascist or a Nazi. The author is the Right Honorable Winston S. Churchill. And in case somebody would say it's the Churchill who runs the garage, another Churchill that runs a garage down on 3rd Street, here's his picture, and you can judge whether it's the right Churchill or not. In this article, he says the Jewish people are dividing up into two groups. One group, he says, is for Zionism, and they want to take Palestine away from the Arabs who's had it for 2,000 years,
and he thinks that's great. This is what Winston Churchill believed in. He says Zionism is good, and these are religious Jews, and we should give them Palestine. Well, so much for that. That's what he says up to here. But he says the other half of world Jewry is going another way. Here he talks about international Jews, and I would like to read you, not George Wallace or Adolf Hitler or George Lincoln Rockwell, I would now like to read you the words of Winston Churchill on the Russian Revolution, ladies and gentlemen. Please listen carefully and see if you are not as shocked as I was, because you have never heard this sort of information. I never did. In violent opposition to all this Zionist sphere of Jewish effort, rise the schemes of the international Jews. The adherents of this sinister confederacy are mostly men reared up among the unhappy populations of countries where Jews are persecuted on account of their race. And parenthetically, surely you all know the Jews were persecuted in Russia. He says, from the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and down to Trotsky in Russia, Bella Kuhn in Hungary, Rosa Luxemburg in Germany, and Emma Goldman in the United States, this worldwide, and this is Churchill's definition of communism, and I think it's pretty good. This worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstitution of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and impossible equality has been steadily growing. Now remember, he's talking about the international Jews. Now listen to this. Here's the shocker. It has been the mainspring of every subversive movement during the 19th century. And now, at last, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworlds of the great cities of Europe and America, not Russia, this band of extraordinary personalities from the underworld of the great cities of Europe and America have gripped the Russian people by the hair of their heads and have become practically the undisputed masters of that enormous empire. Here was Winston Churchill indicating to me that all of these people he named, from Marx to Rosa Luxemburg, Bella Kuhn, were Jewish, and he says the Jewish Confederacy all over the world have seized the Russian people by the hair of their heads and become the masters of the Russian Empire. In other words, he says the Russian Revolution was not Russian. It was the capture of Russia by Jews who had been persecuted, rose up and took the country away. That's what he says right here in the article. Anybody who says, oh, send for it. Read the whole article. I got a few more paragraphs I'd like to read you. He says there is no need to exaggerate the part played in the creation of Bolshevism and in the actual bringing about of the Russian Revolution by these international and, for the most part, atheistical Jews. It is a very great one and probably outweighs all others. With the notable exception of Lenin, the majority of the leading figures of the Russian Revolution are Jews. Moreover, the principal inspiration and driving power comes from the Jewish leaders. Thus, Chechen, a pure Russian, now listen to this carefully, because this is the system they use in the United States. This is the system they're using all over the world right now. When people say, why, there's no Jews running communism now, listen to what Churchill says. Thus, Chechen, a pure Russian, is eclipsed by his nominal subordinate, Litvinov. And the influence of Russians like Bukharin or Lunacharsky cannot be compared with the power of Trotsky or Zinoviev. In other words, he says, at the top level, they have a Gentile who is a front. And right under him, they have the Jewish leader who is the real driving power. That's not Rockwell speaking. That's what Churchill says in this article. Remember the two names, he says, the two guys that are the real driving power, Litvinov and Trotsky. That's what he says in Article 1. Now I'm going to show you another document, this time from the Jews, not from Mr. Churchill, but from the Jews themselves. And I can't tell you how shocked I was when I began to follow this up. I started checking on Mr. Trotsky and on Mr. Litvinov to see who are these guys. So there's a book put out by the Jews called Who's Who in World Jewry. I'm sorry, Who's Who in American Jewry. That's the title, Who's Who in American Jewry. I have here a reduction of the title page, Who's Who in American Jewry. Now, remember, haven't you folks always been told, and didn't you believe, as I did until I was over 30 years old, I thought Jews were just a religious group. If you are a Jew, you believe in Judaism. If you abandon Judaism and deny it and become an atheist, a fanatical atheist, and attack religion, you certainly couldn't be a Jew if Jews are just a religious group, could you? This is what the Jews told me. They said there can be no such thing as a communist Jew because Jews are a religious group, and if you become a communist, you're no longer Jew. That's what the ADL says, and I believed it. So the Jews put out a book called Who's Who in American Jewry, and who do they list? Who is his picture right here? But Leon Trotsky, and we find out his name is Bronstein, and he was a Jewish tailor from the Lower East Side of New York before he went over there to Russia to run the revolution. There's one of them. Remember the other guy we said, Litvinov? Imagine how shocked I was to discover it. Litvinov, that sounds like a good old Russian name, doesn't it? Well, it turns out that he's one of the tribe. His name is Finkelstein. Here he is, put out. Now, listen, this isn't stuff from me. This is stuff from the Jews, published by the Jews as a directory of great Jews, American Jews, and they list the two leaders of Russia as American Jews. Doesn't that surprise you? It did me. Now, the next one, ladies and gentlemen, here's another one. You may say, well, that was quite a while back, because that thing was published in 1939. Here's one that just came out 2 years ago. It cost me $35 to get it, but boy, was it worth it. It's called Who's Who in World Jewry. Now, this is the real authoritative list of the real top Hebrews. Let me give you the list, ladies and gentlemen, of the Jewish organizations. I can't read them all. I'll pick a few out. There's about 100 organizations listed here as the sponsors of this authoritative list. It says of the great and biographic dictionary of outstanding and noble Jews of the world. Let me give you some of the people: the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Historical Society, Anti-Defamation League, B'nai B'rith, the Hillel Foundation. I bet you got one right here. Ask them. Canadian Jewish Congress, Central Conference of American Rabbis, Jewish Theological Seminary, and there's about 100 of them here. They say this is an authoritative book, a list of Jews. On page 29, ladies and gentlemen, what do we find in the authoritative list of Jews? Herbert Aptheker, the chief theoretician of the Communist Party. His daughter Bettina runs the riots on the hour and the half hour out there at Berkeley. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is the proof from their own pages, from the Jews themselves, that they consider a communist, atheist Jew as one of the tribe, as one of the boys, even though he's attacking religion. I didn't put him in there. Can you imagine a book called A Directory of Great Christians, listing George Lincoln Rockwell as one of us? Or Adolf Hitler? Not yet, not for a while. You will see the day that that will be in. But right now, everybody's too scared. People are scared of these Jews, so they don't do it. But the day is going to come when we'll list our good boys in there, too. Now, before I go on from this subject of communism and Jews, I want to show you another document here. Here is a document, these little ribbons. I've left this ribbon outside of the glassine cover so you can see what it is. This one is a document obtained from the U.S. archivist, Wayne C. Grover, signed, sealed by the United States. To fake this up would be forgery. It would be a prison offense. Here is an intelligence report by your G2, by your intelligence people, right after the Russian Revolution, to the American government and to the War Department and the President as to the nature of the Russian Revolution. Remember, this is one of the documents you can get from me and study for yourself and see whether I'm misquoting it or whether it's misrepresenting. I would like to read one section here where it says the composition of the first Russian government, the commissars, and the first Soviet. Here is what the intelligence report shows it was made up of. This is the government of Russia right after the revolution. It was made up of 2 Negroes, 13 Russians, 15 Chinamen, 22 Armenians, and more than 300 Jews. Does that sound like a Russian government to you? Now, in case that isn't clear enough for you, this guy who was at the time, this has been declassified, but when he wrote this, this was a classified document, so the guy let himself go a little bit. Listen to what he says. He says, it is probably unwise to say this loudly in the United States, but the Bolshevik movement is and has been since its beginning guided and controlled by Russian Jews of the greasiest type. Now, can you possibly have any doubt what the guy is saying, what he means, that this is the Russian Revolution wasn't Russian, it was Jewish? But to tell you that, ladies and gentlemen, I got to face violence and force and all sorts of insults and derogation in order to tell you, even if it's wrong, don't you think the right way to deal with this thing is in the form of a formal debate? Don't you think there ought to be a confrontation? If I'm wrong, don't you think the Anti-Defamation League or the Hillel Foundation should supply an expert so that he and I could stand before you and we both present our sides and you judge? They won't do it. They never have done it. They keep saying, we won't degrade ourselves with arguing with Rockwell. I don't wonder. When I've got documents like their own Who's Who in World Jewry, what are they going to say? That's why they tell you they wouldn't degrade themselves to come up here. They won't use the old-fashioned American method of confrontation. I accuse them, and they keep calling me names. They won't discuss the facts. All they keep doing is trying to punch me in the nose, calling me an MF-er like out front here and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me from preaching what's in here because he threatens to punch me in the nose or because he calls me a dirty name. I'm not convinced because somebody has the brilliance to be able to say MF-er to me that he's a genius and has better facts than I do. If that's true, all these guys down here in Watts are the smartest guys in the country because they use that word all day long. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you another element to show you what these people are doing, why they can get away with keeping facts like this away from you. They have a little secret world of their own. They get away with murder that you couldn't do. Now, let me ask you this. This is a hypothetical question. I'm now going to say something that is not true as a hypothesis and ask you what you would think of it. What would you think, folks, if I told you that the Catholics got a deal going in this country, a real profitable deal, and every factory that makes food has to pay a priest to hang around the factory with his feet up on a desk, and he gets a big salary in order to put a little C on all the food to certify that it's pure Catholic, and that you all have to pay for it? Boy, you'd say that's an outrage. Why, look at this separation of church and state. What do these people mean, making us pay for their religious services? Well, now let me tell you, the tribe is doing exactly that to you. They're giving you a good financial screwing, and you don't know it. They never tell you. I'm going to show you how bad it is. Here is a directory called Kosher Products Directory. Some of you in the front row may be able to see it. It's got a circle with a big U in it. Now, this U is called a hexer. And do you know what a hexer stands for? It's the mark of the Jews. It's put out by the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America. And this hexer shows that anybody in this directory has paid the Jews money, cash, in order to get that thing on their product. And where do you think the cash comes from? You pay it. They have two groups. Now, when you get out of here, if you think I'm lying or misrepresenting, you have only one thing to do. It's real easy to do. You have simply to go home, look on the shelf where you keep any groceries, and look for two things, either a K, which means kosher, or this U, which means Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, and you'll find it hidden away on the label of most of your food products, even soap powder, detergents, even antifreeze. It's kosher. Now, they list it here. You're paying extra, a mill or a penny or something extra for every piece of food. This is a racket, ladies and gentlemen, and there's a Jewish newsletter put out by a William Zuckerman. Here it is here. This is, again, available from us for you to read it all. William Zuckerman's letter, he says to his fellow Jews, now, of course, whoever heard of the Jewish newsletter, we don't read it. Of course, I do, but you people don't, the goy, as they call it, the sheep that don't study what's going on. You don't study what's going on. But they say to each other, boys, we got to get a little cooler about this thing. They're catching on. Let me show you what they have down here. This is under the heading, The Kosher Racket. And under this heading, which you can get from me and read, you will find out that a rabbi in Cleveland, Ohio, sued the Coca-Cola company for one summer's blessing of the Coca-Cola. And he collected $30,000. That's pretty good pay. I don't know what the rabbi had to do to each bottle. Maybe snip a little off the end of the bottle as it went through the line in order to make it kosher. My point, ladies and gentlemen, is multiply the Coca-Cola in just Cleveland by all over the country, by all the other drinks, by all the other seasons, by the year after year after year that's gone on since then, and the Jews come up with a figure, and incidentally, it's a very ominous figure, of $6 million a year that they're getting. That's what they say. You're paying them $6 million a year to eat kosher food. Would you pay $6 million a year to eat Catholic food or Buddhist food? Do you think that any religion has the right to impose its cost on the whole population the way they do? And if you don't put that, any manufacturer doesn't put the symbol on, he doesn't have much luck. He can't get his advertising, just like me, he can't be heard. His product won't go. They say this right here in their own newsletter, and don't anybody let anybody out there say Rockwell is just ranting and raving. You get the document as I did and study it and see if the Jews themselves admit it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to the heart of this matter and show you how they operate. How they operate to keep you in ignorance, how they issue these false charts and lie to you, and why, how it works. Here we caught them dead red in the act. I got a letter here this time from the secret channels of the Jews. This was hard to get, but we've also printed it, and if it's a lie, it's from the Anti-Defamation League, who doesn't care for me too much. They would love to bag me for this one. If it's a forgery, they'd have me every time I speak, they'd get me. Here I am again, boys. If you want to bag me and this is a fake, just go ahead. Here is a letter from the Jews, the Anti-Defamation League, to publishers around America. And I want to show you what they have done about a book they don't like. And before I do it, I'm going to have to make a confession. In Germany, they burned books. And this was not only wrong, in my opinion, it was stupid. Absolutely stupid. It didn't even if it was right, it didn't accomplish the purpose they want. If you want to get a book read, the best way is to get it banned in Boston as too dirty, or burn it, or have the Kennedys sue to prevent publication. This is what you do to get a book read. The Jews aren't so stupid. Let me tell you what this Jewish letter to publisher says. Scribner's and Sons have just published a book by Madison Grant entitled The Conquest of a Continent. It is extremely antagonistic to Jewish interests, emphasized throughout as the Nordic superiority theory, and the utter negation of any melting pot philosophy with regard to America. And incidentally, there's not a word against the Jews in this book. That's what they don't like. They don't like it that this guy says we shouldn't be a melting pot. We should keep racially pure. Well, now, up to this point, I'll back the right of the Jews to write this. Everybody has a right to say this is a vile book and you shouldn't read it, or we don't like it. And I'd fight for anybody's right to do that. But that's not what they did. Listen to what they did to that book. We are interested in stifling the sale of this book. And they did, ladies and gentlemen. You can't get it except that it's a rare book. You won't find The Conquest of a Continent. The Jews don't want you to read it, so you don't see it. You just see their side of everything. The racial question, all you see is that the Negroes are wonderful, Jews are even better, and if there's anything awful, it's a white Southern Christian Protestant. He's no good. This is the only side you ever see. You never see the other side because of this book stifling. And listen how they do it here. We believe that this stifling can best be accomplished by refusing to be stampeded into giving the book any publicity at all. Every review or even every public criticism of the book of this character brings it to the attention of many who would otherwise never know of the existence of the book. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've written a book, and maybe it's the worst book in the world. Maybe it really is. But don't you think you ought to have a chance to know that? Do you think the Jews, as they have, should make it impossible for you to pick that book up in a bookstore and look at it and say, that stinks and I won't buy it? You ought to have that right. You do have that right by the American Constitution to judge for yourselves what you want to read. The Jews have taken it away from you. They stifle books. Hundreds and thousands of books are not allowed to be published because the Jewish businessmen, who are geniuses, I won't deny that, have risen to the top, and I won't deny their right to do that, but then they've abused their power. They've got enormous power of wealth, and they use this power of wealth to tell anybody, any bookseller, if you carry George Lincoln Rockwell's book, you can't get any other books to sell. Who's going to go out of business to sell my one book, or The Conquest of a Continent, or any other book? George Wallace wrote a book. I think he'd have a hard time getting in a lot of bookstores. Maybe you hate George Wallace. Well, if Gus Hall wrote a book, let's use the other side. I think Gus Hall's book should be available so you can pick it up and decide. These Jews don't have the right to tell you you can't read what they don't like, and they do it. And that's what I'm here tonight to tell you. And in order to do it, I have to face force, violence, arrest, all sorts of harassments that the same people that are doing this don't do to the Vietnam Protest Committee. They don't do it to the flag burners. They just do it to anti-communists. I understand poor Mr. Welch is going to speak here tomorrow. And God help him. This could be a very wild and woolly audience with Mr. Welch, because he's not rough and tough. I gave up being a conservative years ago because I discovered you can't fight these people nice. They're not nice. They yell MF-er at you. And out in the street, I just soon yell it right back and do more than that besides. Anybody who wants to punch me in the nose, the only way to deal with him is punch him harder until he understands that you're not going to tolerate any more of this punching. And if you don't do that, he's going to stomp you. In World War II, ladies and gentlemen, I was taught to hate. If hate is a bad thing, then Franklin D. Roosevelt is the wickedest man in history, because he taught millions of Americans to hate Germans and to hate Japs, and we did. And we beat the hell out of them because we hated them. We killed them as fast as we could. I was one of them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the enemy is communism, and they're preaching love. That's all you hear from these lovely people, these standees here. Love. And you're getting whipped. Purpose of preaching hate in that war was because the enemy then had his finger on communism. So they taught you to hate them and kill them. Now the enemy, or so-called enemy, we're supposed to have as an enemy, which we won't even declare in the Congress, is communism, and they're preaching love and coexistence. Can't you see the picture? Just like the book stifling. In one instance, they preach hate and fight. and we won. Now they want us to lose, and they're preaching love, and we're losing. How stupid can the American people be, and how long will they continue it? And I maintain all it will take to wake them up is what you good people are allowing me to do tonight. Let people tell you the truth and let you judge it for yourselves. The people are smart enough to figure it out. The minute you let them see these stifled books, they'll see there's another side. The minute they hear these stifled speakers like myself, they'll see that I'm not a raging lunatic. They'll see that I've got some facts behind it. Well, let me ask you something, ladies. Well, I won't put it in the form of a question. I'll make it a statement. Tonight, I have done a psychological trick to you. You may call it a dirty trick. I think it's a good thing to have done. I have now set every one of you in this audience so you have changed forever, whether you realize it or not. I'm going to point out how. When I got back from World War II, thinking that I had saved the world from any more terrorism and tyranny and so forth, since then there's been 18 people convicted of treason to this great country. 17 of them have been Jews like the Rosenbergs, Harry Gold, Brothman, Moskowitz, Harry Gold, and the whole parade of Jews. After this speech tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you know what's going to happen to you as has happened to me once? From now on, whenever they haul out one of these little communist spies, you'll notice the length of the nose. You'll never forget it. When they tell you that the names of the new English spies are the Krogers, you'll notice that it says in the paper in parenthesis, Cohens. You'll notice that when it says up in Canada they catch Harry Rose and Sam Carr as the leaders of communism in Canada, it turns out Rose's name is Rosenberg and Carr's real name is Cohen. Just like Litvinov and Trotsky, they changed their names. But you'll notice it from now on. You can't help it. And ladies and gentlemen, once you notice the truth, you never can forget it. It's possible to convert from a lie to the truth. But I never heard of anybody, once having found the truth, going back to a lie. You'll never do it. No matter what you think of me tonight, no matter what you think of this speech, from now on you'll start noticing every time you see a communist group, you will begin to notice what the leaders look like and who they are. And you will discover they're members of the tribe. Who do you think is the head of a communist organization in this country that is so red, so leftist, and so traitorous that they call the Communist Party of Gus Hall a bunch of squares? Progressive Labor is the real red-hot communist organization in this country, and the leader of it is a man named Jake Rosen. Does that sound Swedish to you? Every time I look around, wherever you go, wherever these communist operations are going, here are these Jewish people leading them. Now, those Jews are in the audience who are saying, oh, Rockwell, you ought to die, instead of cussing me for telling the audience this, you ought to be saying those Jews are traitors to our race. If there's loyal Jews in this audience, and I'm sure there are, you should be deploring this as good Italians deplore the mafia. You don't get punched in the nose for saying the mafia is Sicilian. It is. But you do get punched in the nose by these Jews for saying communism is Jewish. It is. I'm not saying all Jews are communists or all communists are Jews. That would be wicked and stupid. Just as it would be stupid to say, because the mafia is Sicilian, it would be stupid and wicked to say all Sicilians are gangsters, or all gangsters are Sicilians. But you all still know, in spite of those facts being true, it's still true that the mafia is a Sicilian operation. Communism, from Karl Marx, who was a Jew, Engels, LaSalle, right straight through all of these people that I've read, all through our spies now, right up to Leo Rosen, is a Jewish operation. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know that, you are not going to be able to deal with it realistically. You can't, because the Jews are just be able to stifle everything about it that they don't want you to hear. And that's what's happened to me, ladies. What happened to me, they say I'm a hater and a bigot. Well, I don't see how it's bigotry when I find out that they've lied to me and I don't like it. Let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Have you heard in your history courses in college or high school, did anybody ever mention the possibility that the Russian Revolution wasn't Russian, that it was Jewish? Maybe it's not true, but don't you think that such a strong possibility should be mentioned to you so you could think about it? But they cover it up. If you mention it every once in a while when I'm at a college and there's a history professor up here, I ask them, why don't you mention that? And if they try to deny it, I beat them down with the facts. But they don't do it in the classroom. They don't tell you. It's not in your textbooks. And I think that's wrong. And incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, if you want it specially, when you send away, we put out a special reader's guide of suppressed books. Ask for it and have a ball. Watch the Jews suffer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me show you. I'm going to wind this up by showing you what this is leading to, what is happening to your country. I haven't got half the time. I'd like to give you the total picture of all the horrors that this has led up to, but I haven't got the time. I can only tell you that they have lied to you so much that when you start hearing what's actually and really happening in your country, you know what I usually find in most audiences? They giggle. I'm going to give you an example. See, it dropped down here. I want to show you something that should shock you. You should just almost be panic-stricken, because when you finally realize the import of this thing, you will be. And I get many letters from every audience that they are. But usually when I first show this little exhibit to an audience, they titter, because it just doesn't seem possible, and I agree with you. But it's true. Now, I'm going to show you this document here. This is a thing called the Crusader, put out in Cuba by a man named Robert Williams, the ex-head of the NAACP in Monroe, North Carolina. He led an armed rebellion down there. He kidnapped a white couple, and he fled to Cuba for refuge, from where he runs a thing curiously called Radio Free Dixie, broadcasting to the Negroes on how to make bombs and so forth. Now, this booklet here that I have was published before the rioting in Watts. And ladies and gentlemen, this is available from us in the packet. You read it and decide for yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, if this is not the blueprint for Watts and Cleveland and Chicago. Here it all is, tells them exactly what to do. You know what the most important thing he says to do is? He says you got to keep practicing the way they are, a little here and a little there, for the day when you can strike with Mau Mau terrorism all over the United States. And to do it, he says you've got to have one element that will absolutely destroy the white man. He says the white man has become soft. And I think he's right about this. I think the Negroes in the ghetto are tough. They're forced to do degrading, menial, hard physical labor. And they're in good, tough physical shape. Every time I go to jail, it's hard to survive. They're rough. And when I go out on the streets and I see these guys with their hair in their eyes all slinking around, a bunch of peace creep white guys, they look like girls. And they think it's bad and naughty to fight. They're ashamed to fight. They're scared to fight. Negroes aren't scared. They're not scared of knives. They're not scared of any kind of violence, because every Friday and Saturday night they cut each other up for practice. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this guy puts this thing out, and you know what he says is necessary to completely terrorize all you white people? He says you depend on technocracy, on all your technology, most of all on electricity. All over the Congo, all over the Portuguese Angola, wherever the terrorists tried to take over, the first thing they tried to get were the power stations. Because if they could black out a place in the night, in the darkness, the terror would be complete. It would be impossible to fight them. We would be shooting our own people. This was the technique. Black the place out. Now, let me tell you something amazing about this book, The Crusader. It comes out every month or so by this guy Williams. He can't get it directly into the United States, so he sends it through Canada. And on the back here, it tells where you can get it, this little magazine here, in Canada. You can get it through Mrs. Ann, remember this name, Mrs. Ann Olson, 21 Ellis Gardens, Toronto 3, Ontario, Canada. This is where you can get this booklet telling about how to terrorize the white people by shutting off the electricity. Do you know where Mr. Olson works? Sir Adam Beck Power Plant, where the power failed and blacked out almost a quarter of the United States and all the northeastern section of Canada. I'm aware that this is a hard thing to believe. Right after it happened in the northeast, it happened in the southeast, it happened in the northwest, it's happened all over the country. They're just checking to be sure they can do it, and they can. Ho, 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 ho. Well, those of you who are ho-ho-hoing, I think you'll find a lot of the audience are doing a little studying. And when they get done, they'll be wondering why you guys are ho-ho-hoing, just like me. This has happened in country after country all over the world. And you know what they're doing? The main element that they have to do in order to pull off this terrorism, the first thing they got to, I hate to sound like a bircher, but I'm going to have to. The first thing that's necessary in order to pull off their terrorism, ladies and gentlemen, is to destroy the police. So all over this country, you hear these people are making a battle cry out of the word police brutality. Anytime a police officer arrests a black man for anything, police brutality, police brutality. That's all we hear. And meanwhile, these honest citizens, these poor oppressed people that are being brutalized by these terrible cops are plotting to destroy the police, lock, stock, and barrel. Here is a booklet. This one is not available, by the way. We are printing it. I haven't got it available yet. We just got it. This is a document put out by the Internal Security Subcommittee of the United States Senate with captured communist documents showing black mobs taking over and killing the anti-riot forces to stop of the police force. They're out to get the police. And although I have difficulties with the police, I always cooperate with them, and I find most of them are pretty decent guys trying to... I don't give a damn what you people think. The cops are doing a hell of a good job. They're up against terrific odds. They're not getting paid, and somebody ought to back them up, even if it's only me. But instead of that, what do you find? The communists and most of these Jewish love groups and all these people, these subversive people, attacking your police forces, because it's all that stands between you and safety. That's all that protects you from this communist terrorism. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wind up with the final worldwide picture and try to make it clear enough to you to see why, eventually, what you saw on the screen behind me is going to become a reality, not only in this country, but all over the world, because if it doesn't, you are going to be destroyed. Let me show you a matter of history in a different perspective than you've ever thought of it before. When I got back out of World War II as a fighter pilot, as I told you, I thought that I had finished forever the need for my people and my kids and my country ever again to have to go out and fight another horrible war like that. I couldn't believe that it could ever happen again, such a terrible war. Well, up in China, right, no sooner I got home than in China, a guy rose up by the name of Mao Zedong. Now, some of you young folks are too young to remember this. Mao Zedong rose up in China, and do you know what happened, ladies and gentlemen? All these people went all over the country, these people that believe that there's no communist threat and we shouldn't believe it. Now, listen to this. They told us that Mao Zedong wasn't a communist. He couldn't be a communist. He was an agrarian reformer. Do you know who told us that? Dean Acheson, the president, Walter Lippmann, all the great pundits and geniuses of your country that are now telling you, for instance, that Rockwell is a bigot and a no good, and Welch is an extremist and a crazy man and so forth. All these same people said Mao Zedong is not a communist. In fact, he's the George Washington of China. At Dean Rusk, your president, secretary of state, got up at the University of Pennsylvania and made precisely that statement. He said he's not a communist. He's the George Washington of Cuba. Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, this guy that said this is now your secretary of state. Boy, how wrong can you get? I remember at the time I wasn't even a conservative yet. By that time, I was just an ordinary, I think I was a Republican by that time. I'd begun to move a little at a time. So I came back here, and here I am a Republican, and I hear all these leaders of my country saying Mao Zedong is a good guy. There were 26 articles in a row in the Saturday Evening Post, which has been bought by the Zimbalist Jewish family. The Saturday Evening Post printed 26 articles in a row saying Mao Zedong could not be a communist. At the time, ladies and gentlemen, I remember a bunch of nuts and kooks, especially one called Joe McCarthy. And he was saying he is a communist. But of course, Eleanor was saying he couldn't be a communist. And we were being told by everybody else in the country that he couldn't be a communist. So these kooks, I believe, they must be terrible people. There must be something wrong with men that will go around lying about a guy like Mao Zedong, trying to ruin world relations and so forth. So in the name of helping agrarian reform to help the peasants of Cuba, our government helped put in Mao Zedong. General Marshall went over there and boasted. He says, with a stroke of the pen, I disarmed 20 divisions of the Chinese Nationalist Army. 20 divisions we disarmed. We took all their arms away. Meanwhile, Russia was supplying Japanese arms by the ton and ton after ton to the Chinese communists. Chinese communism took over, and you should have heard Mr. Rusk and all these people be surprised, because no sooner had they taken over, Mao Zedong rose up and said, I'm a communist. I've always been a communist. He murdered 40 million people to thin out the Chinese population a little bit. That's a hell of a way to have an agrarian reform, is to kill all the peasants. That's what he did. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, you should have heard Eleanor. Oh, she says, what a surprise. How could this be? How could such a thing happen? Who would have thought he could have been a communist? He was absolutely astounded. All these people were amazed. They just couldn't understand it. Well, now, you wouldn't think anybody could be took twice on this deal, would you? And yet, ladies and gentlemen, it happened again. The next thing that happened, down in Cuba, they had a guy named Batista, and you should have read the propaganda. Some of you folks may remember this deal. Batista Mr. Batista was a terrible guy, we were told, because every once in a while, every week or so, he'd kill somebody. He'd actually kill people down there. Of course, he was a Christian and pro-American and anti-communist, but that didn't matter because he was a dirty fascist who killed people. And not only that, but the peasants were oppressed. So in the name of the oppressed peasants, once again, we backed Mr. Castro, once again, Mr. Lippmann, Eleanor, Dean Rusk, Dean Acheson, everybody told us Castro couldn't be a communist. And by this time, I was a conservative and becoming a Nazi. And by this time, I was beginning to notice his record showed he was a communist. And I was one of the ones saying he is a Red. Here's his record in Venezuela. He started a communist revolution. Here's the evidence. And yet all these top leaders that are now leading your country were once again wrong, just like they were with Mao Zedong. And they said, no, he's the George Washington of Cuba. So Mr. Castro took over with our help. He was taken to the United States with a triumphal tour all around Disneyland, I think he got. He was put on the Ed Sullivan Show. Ed Sullivan put his arm around him and said he's the George Washington of Cuba for 20 million people. He went right back down to Cuba, and he held a Hate America parade. That was what he called it. He did cast every calumny on this country, and he said, I've always been a communist. And once again, Eleanor was, oh, how could it be? Walter Lippmann was just absolutely appalled. All these guys, Dean Rush, Dean Acheson, all wrong again, and all us nutty conservatives, haters and bigots, every one of us right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, they're doing it right here in your country to you, and they got many of you helping for the best motives in the world. Get the picture. They always pick an oppressed group. In the name of the oppressed group, they set up these George Washingtons who are going to lead their people out of the land of Egypt into freedom. That's always their cry, freedom. And so, by the way, I might point out, well, I will later point out their war cry. They take this oppressed group. In the name of helping the oppressed group, they set up a communist tyranny. All your leaders tell you they couldn't be communists until finally the day comes when they were wide open as communists. And then all your leaders say, oh, we're surprised. Now, here in this country, you do have an oppressed group, ladies and gentlemen, but it's not peasants. Remember, in the other countries, they call it agrarian reform. China, agrarian reform. Cuban, agrarian reform. You don't need agrarian reform here because there's not millions of starving peasants. You do have an oppressed group, and it's black. Black people in this country have a rotten lot. Had I been a black man, I'd have been Malcolm X. And I have no respect for these hat-in-hand squirm-inners and crawl-inners and sit-inners and wee-wee-inners. I have a lot of respect, as much as I'll fight them, for Black Panthers and people who want to stand up for black power. I understand Stokely's going to speak here. Well, me and Stokely, sooner or later, are going to face each other over rifles, but at least I respect the man because he stands up for what he believes in. Well, now, anyway, what my point is, the black man has a rotten lot. He is oppressed. So in the name of the oppressed group, they have set up a movement called, not agrarian reform in this country, they call it civil rights. And most of the leaders have read records that long, just like Castro and just like Mao Zedong. But you're told by all the people like are standing up here, why he couldn't be a communist. He's a preacher. He won the Nobel Prize. How could he be a commie? And I'm telling you his record of red affiliations is that long. I'm telling you that you have it right here on your own soil. You've had two strikes, ladies and gentlemen. One more and you're out because it's the last country in the world that can stand up to them. They're out to take over this country. I've showed you how they're doing it. I've showed you how they're blacking out so you don't know the information. I finally showed you how they've lied to you at least twice. These same people that are standing up here are people that are telling you now in Vietnam, we're just protesting. We're not helping the enemy like hell. When they go out there and do everything they can to get worldwide publicity, the American people are down in the Vietnam War. They are killing Americans, and it's treason, and it ought to be stopped. It ought not to be tolerated another minute. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if we can't get our people woken up, if we can't get it stopped, we are going to lose our country, the greatest and finest country in the history of the world. And the only way I know to stop it is with enlightenment backed up by the guts to stand up to these people and fight them when they need it. And our slogan in doing it, ladies and gentlemen, is that the white people of this country have got to quit being intimidated and divided and conquered. Let me point out, in the Congo, they got a black country, and they won't tolerate a white leader. Let me ask you this. What do you think would happen to a bunch of you white folks that went over to the Congo and started running around hollering, get Blackie? They'd eat you, ladies and gentlemen. But you're supposed to let them do it over here. What I'm getting at is, in this country, the blacks vote black. The Jews vote Jewish. Only the white people are stupid enough to divide themselves and cancel each other out into little Republican and Democrat teams, and you got to cut it out. If they vote black and they vote Jewish, you got to vote white, which is why I preach white power. When you stand together, the majority is supposed to rule in this country, and the majority is white and Christian. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to fight to see that we have majority rule in this country. I thank you very much. I thank you very much, and if they'll pass up the questions, I'll try to answer them.
Would the ushers please collect the questions from the audience? you have a little slip of paper on your programs to write questions.
He says pass up the slips of paper so we can get the questions in here. While they're doing it, ladies, while they're collecting the slips, I got something to show you. This is just a little encore here. While I got another document here. Somebody go collect them. They're down there with the slips. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you a document here from the Los Angeles Times, usually buried away. You know, you have a lady here in California that's supposed to be the leader of the communist group here. This is the sort of thing that really shocks me that you don't know. You know about Dorothy Healy? Sounds like a nice Irish girl. Well, here it turns out Dorothy Healy's name is Dorothy Rosenblum. It's right here in the newspaper. And every time I start checking, this is what I find out. Well, now, give me some questions here, and I'll start answering. All right. They are now choosing the questions, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Don't wait too long. Let me have something.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to...
They can't hear you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Dr. Robert Wohl of the History Department. He will be selecting and reading the questions. Dr. Wohl?
Mr. Rockwell, let me read the first question. Why can't I burn American flags as part of the doctrine of free expression of ideas?
Well, I'll give you two answers to that. If anybody had even tried to burn an American flag during World War II, anybody, any place, would have stopped him and killed him, and the police would have helped him. And the second answer why you can't do it is if I get my hands on you, you won't be able to do anything else.
Mr. Rockwell, would you please elaborate on the Jewish communist collaborations of Mao Zedong?
Oh, now they really think they got me, don't they? Well, have you noticed there's a little difficulty going on between the boys in Russia and the boys in China? See, the boys in China are not quite so much communists as they are colored nationalists. They've kicked their Jews out in Red China. And they're having a difficulty with the place where the Jews are still thick over there in Moscow. The problem is that whenever the Communist Party starts kicking the Jews out, it becomes nationalist. And then they're in serious trouble with world communism.
Do you advocate murdering Jews even though you hate them?
I do not advocate murdering anybody. I know what this is going to. This goes back to the 6 million baloney. Everybody has been told so damn many times, and I believed it for years, that 6 million Jews were murdered, that you just can't doubt it. That's all you ever hear. Let me ask you something, ladies and gentlemen. Do you ever hear even 1 millionth, as much as you hear about the 6 million, do you ever hear about the 20 million Christians that Mr. Litvinov and Mr. Trotsky, or rather Mr. Bronstein and Mr. Finkelstein knocked off? 20 million, they boast about it. Do you ever hear anything about that? No. All you ever hear is the war propaganda about those 6 million Jews. And that's strictly propaganda to get you afraid to stand up and mention anything bad about Jews, because right away the tears start running down and you're attacking these helpless people. Well, I don't think there's anything helpless about the Rosenbergs that gave the atom bomb to Russia that's now scaring all you peace creeps so much. I don't advocate murdering any innocent person, Jewish, black, or anything else.
If the Russian Revolution was a Jewish revolution, and if many communists are Jewish, why are Jews being persecuted in the Soviet Union today?
This is right here. I have a clipping from the Washington Post, Friday, October 7th, 1966. Young Jews hail holiday in Moscow, and it says, thousands of young Jews danced and sang in the streets outside Moscow's great synagogue. This is not very often reported, but the Jews are doing just fine. The problem with them is the Russian communists are atheists. They despise religion. They're persecuting all religions, not just Jews. but they're persecuting Baptists, Catholics, anybody who is religious is being persecuted. It's just that the Jews yell louder than anybody else. What's happened is the atheist Jews are persecuting the religious Zionist Jews. This is not anti-Semitism. It's simply a little family argument going on.
Do you communicate with the neo-Nazi party arising in West Germany?
I don't dare. That'd be the quickest way to kill it. All that would be necessary to ruin that party would be for them to find one letter from George Lincoln Rockwell, say, hey, you're doing great, fellas, keep it up, or do so-and-so. And they would say, now, you see, this is a front for Rockwell, or it's part of this big... They're trying to prove that it's a Nazi movement. In other words, the minute they do, they can't have their party. It's forbidden, verboten in Germany to be a Nazi. My people all go to jail. The Nazi open Nazis in my group. I see Tuven Friedman or somebody, Rosenthal, some Jew says he's just turned over the names of 450 of my people to the authorities. Well, he doesn't have to. My people are all open, and most of them are in jail for it.
If Playboy misrepresents your views through editing and exclusion of facts, why haven't you sued them for libel?
The answer is, ladies and gentlemen, they confronted with me the fait accompli. They were supposed to give me galley proofs. I was driving across the desert near Amarillo, called my headquarters to see if there were any messages, and they said that Playboy had called and to call Playboy. I called Playboy, and they said, Mr. Rockwell, it's too late to send you galley proofs. I'm going to read you the story over the telephone and tell us if you like it. Well, how can you correct anything over the telephone? So they read me over the telephone, and I tried to do the best I could, and a lot of the things I asked for, of course, they didn't do. When they finally sent me anything at all, it was page proofs, and they said, the presses are rolling. You have your choice. You can either stop the interview entirely, and they would have had to do it, or you can release the page proofs. So I chose to take the calculated risk of letting all that misrepresentation out, because otherwise I would have lost 8 million readers. And the hardest thing in the world for me to do is reach anybody with anything. I need outlets to be able to invite to get to colleges to speak, for instance. So I chose being misrepresented to get publicity.
Some prominent and non-Jewish and non-communist historians have stated that Hitler's legitimate father probably was partially Jewish, making him one-fourth Jewish. It is also said that Hitler knew of this and tried to suppress this fact. What is your comment on this?
Well, all I can say is that if the Jews are now trying to take credit for Hitler, then they got everybody. There's nobody left. They already got Christ and Marx and Freud and everybody else. I guess they're really trying to get horn in on everything. And I would say further, they scream he's the worst man that ever lived, practically the devil himself. Well, if he turns out to be Jewish, then they're cutting their own throats with this kind of propaganda.
You talk of the Jewish race. I have never heard an anthropological professor, talk of the Jewish race. Please elaborate on your concept of the Jewish race.
All right, sir, I'd be happy to do that. If we had a blackboard here, having been a commercial artist of some skill and won some prizes at it and so forth, if we had a blackboard here, I could start drawing faces on the blackboard. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I could not draw a face that any of you would recognize as a Protestant or a face that you'd recognize as a Catholic, but if I drew a certain type of profile with a big hook nose, right away, you'd all know what it was. Now, do you think you grow that nose, ladies and gentlemen, and that Jewish look by going to a synagogue? Do you think you could look like that? Do you think you could look like that by going to a synagogue? The Jews are recognizable, not all of them, but some of them. You can look at them, and they look like Jews, like Harry Golden. Now, don't tell me that this is not a group of biological extraction.
The evidence...
Oh, excuse me. Wait a minute. Somebody says, you know, Harry Golden, let me show you how these people lie. Harry Golden wrote a column up in San Francisco when I was up there, and Harry Golden says, I used to know Rockwell's old man, Doc Rockwell, really good. He was a pretty good guy. In fact, he says, Groucho Marx was Rockwell's godfather. Well, now stop and think. Groucho Marx is a Jew. My family was Christian. You know what a godfather is supposed to do? He promises to bring up a Christian. Now, how can a Jew be the godfather and promise to bring me up as a Christian when he's a Jew? And this is what Harry Golden told him.
The evidence you presented from the directories of American and world Jewry is fallacious. A person is considered Jewish by Jews when the mother was a Jew, regardless of whether they are really Jewish or not. That is, Aptekar is not really Jewish. He is in the directory because his mother was Jewish. Please comment.
Well, all I can say, ladies and gentlemen, In many cases, the Jews take credit for Karl Marx. Whenever they want to show how intellectual they are, they take credit for Karl Marx, who was an apostate Jew and wrote a book called A World Without Jews and hated them and so forth. I have seen the Jews taking credit for people who have only Jewish fathers, or people, well, they claim Marilyn Monroe is a Jew. She didn't have a Jewish mother. And Sammy Davis is a Jew, although he doesn't look like a Jew. He looks like something else to me.
Why do you carry the tape recorder under your jacket when you speak?
Wherever I speak, ladies and gentlemen, I tape every word of every interview because I am lied about every day, every hour, every minute so much. The only way I can prove it is to have the tape. I have the complete tape of the Playboy interview. And any time any journalist would like to find out whether I'm telling the truth, I can present him with the whole interview. Anybody who says that I came here in this audience and said all Jews are communists or all communists are Jews, which you'll probably read in the paper tomorrow, I got the tape to show they're lying.
Now, this is a rather long one, but I think you'll want to answer it. The Russian Communist Party purged millions. If it is composed of powerful Jews, then it necessarily follows that the Jews have a cohesive, highly organized body in the form of the Russian Communist Party. In a like manner, you contend that there is an extremely powerful Jewish faction in America. But if they are so powerful and selfishly inclined, why haven't they purged you?
Well, they sure are trying. They just today tried to throw me 3 months in the clink, and they've been doing it every place I go. Martin Luther King goes all through Chicago tearing the whole place up last summer, and he doesn't even get threatened with arrest. They tell me on the national television they're going to arrest me on sight. And the sheriff says he'll think of some charges afterwards. I go up to his office, and he arrests me. Now they're going to try to put me in jail for 3 months. They try to purge me as much as they can. Mr. Cohen, the Internal Revenue people, sends 8 big goon squads into my place and just locks it up and grabs everything. I got no recourse. There's nothing I can do. I'm too poor and little. If you don't think they're trying to run me out of business and purge me, you ought to see. If we're going to quit, I want to mention one thing. I noticed there's one question that's been dumped here in the garbage. Somebody asked, what is the title of your book and where can you get it? I guess they don't want me to answer that, so I won't. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Good speech. What's kind of amazing to me is how what he went through then is very similar to what people are going through now. Hasn't really changed all that much. Perhaps the thing to recognize about what's going on today and what went on then is that George Lincoln Rockwell was really starting to get somewhere, actually. And he was taking a different approach. He had started to learn a bit more. He kept learning. And I think he was becoming very dangerous. And they reacted. A similar thing is going on today. And fortunately, the real leadership is more distributed. I mean, is there... Is there leadership? The controlled opposition leadership is representing us in the media, making us look foolish, look silly, look how the media wants us to look. And some people argue about George Lincoln Rockwell's tactics, the use of the swastika, blah, blah, blah. I think he did a fine job with what he was doing. And if he had been able to continue to lead the movement, it would have gone somewhere. Let's play another short clip here. That's him on TV. I'll play the Omni-5 video. Hopefully the sound effects aren't too off-putting.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National Socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a certain dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every National Socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National Socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of us, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got in power in Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. and the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed, and the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business, and the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change.